Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, April 23rd, 2017. This is episode 1383. Enjoy. Hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. It's time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and those smartphones and those smart watches and the augmented reality and the virtual reality and the real reality at 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the mnemonic, so you can remember it. There's a website, too. Actually, the phone number's there. I probably should just say, go to the website. That's a lot of work, especially if you're in the car. So when you get home and you want to, you know, find a link I mentioned or a story I mentioned or product I mentioned, that's easy enough. All you have to do is go to techguylabs.com. And, you know, we keep that open all day and all night, 24/7. We never close. Techguylabs.com, no sign up, no fee. It's just there. Let's see. Big Facebook F8 conference, the developers conference, was this week. Facebook is amazing. What a company. They change on a dime. I guess that's the new thing with big companies. Not Apple. No. Apple moves very slowly and very thoughtfully and carefully. But Google and Facebook, I guess it's the newer companies, because Microsoft kind of doesn't really move on a dime either. But Google and Facebook, in fact, wasn't it Facebook's motto for a while, innovate and fail fast? Like, make they're in the business of throwing things against the wall and seeing if it sticks, that kind of thing. Last year at the F8 conference, it was all bots. It was all about how we're going to make Messenger the platform. Platform's an important word in technology. Everybody wants to be a platform. I should probably define platform because it's going to come up in this conversation. Platform, just like a physical platform, is something that you can stand on. A platform is something consistent, solid, unchanging that developers can stand on. They can build their apps. The problem is Facebook's platform isn't exactly rock solid, is it? It's changing all the time, and developers are getting a little seasick, a little queasy. Microsoft is the best example of platform. Windows in the 90s was so solid, so steady, so widely adopted that everybody wrote software for it. There was no program that you couldn't get on Windows, right? That's a platform. That's how a platform works. Now, we're in the internet era, and so the term platform isn't as steady as it used to be. Now it's in the cloud. How solid are clouds? Right? Google says, we're a platform. Amazon says, we're a platform. So the latest is Facebook. It says, well, last year it said the platform was messaging. You build stuff on our Facebook Messenger, and people responded. There are, I think, 100,000 or close to 100,000 bots. Your bank has a bot. You know, you can say, and I don't know. Honestly, I don't understand it. Maybe I'm too old. Maybe I don't. You tell me. Do you want to? How would you like to know what your bank balance is? You know, if you're a real traditionalist, you want to call them or go to the teller. Most people don't do that anymore. If you're kind of, the middle age, you know, you would launch the banking app, right? And you get the whole thing on the screen. You can see, or maybe go to the website. That's, that's quick and easy. Apparently, what the kids want to do is send a text message to the bank, say, yo, what up? My balance? Check it. And get a text message back that says, yo, you're overdrawn, or whatever. You're loaded, buddy. That's apparently how, at least that's how banks think young people want to interact with them. I'm not sure young people think that. And so the whole thing about bots is, well, you don't have to go to a web page or launch an app. You just text message me, and I'll tell you what's the weather. I find that maybe because typing on a phone is hard for me. I guess if you grew up with it, it's easy. It just doesn't, the theory is this is how kids are, if you look at a kid, they're messaging all the time, right? Always tapping on the message. So maybe that's it. Except that, that's not the big platform anymore. That was last year. Oh, that was 2016. So 2016. Oh, come on. Really? Now, and they did, they didn't kill bots. They mentioned them briefly. But now the platform is, are you ready for this? The camera in the Facebook app. That's a platform. Not the Facebook app itself. The camera in the Facebook app. Facebook's going to give developers an opportunity to access the camera. Of course, you'll have to develop it inside the Facebook platform, or presumably the Messenger platform. And you can access the camera, and you can do all sorts of cool stuff. This is what they call augmented reality. Where have we seen this before? Oh, Snapchat. Have you ever used Snapchat? So a lot of us oldsters think Snapchat is, just kids sending themselves dirty pictures. But it's actually far from that. In fact, it's very, very little of that, I think. Mostly it's, first took off with the younger set because they didn't want their communications to become permanent record. They wanted to be able to just chat back and forth, and it was kind of, it disappears after a day, and that's great. But then Facebook, Snapchat kind of figured out, people are using the camera, taking a lot of pictures. What if we added these crazy, wacky filters so you can be a bunny, and it even has a voice changer? And when you open your mouth, rainbows come out. Stuff like that. It's very popular. I know if you've been online at all, you've seen the captured versions of these Snapchats. By the way, that's something Snapchat changed. They made it very easy for you to create something in Snapchat, then save it out to your camera and post it on Instagram or Facebook. That's kind of interesting. Apple's so jealous that they created a program called Clips. They didn't make a social network. That's too much. We're not. Apple's been there, done that, doesn't want to do it again. Got the T-shirt. Now they're happy. There's no more social networks for Apple. But they want you, and I don't think this is going to work, they want you to create your video in the Clips app, dress it all up, put on bunny ears and flowers, virtual flowers, text, and then save it and go to Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat and upload it. No. Not going to happen. You do it in the app. It's just faster and easier that way. That's why Snapchat has this kind of lock-in. They've been doing very well until Facebook started putting some of these features in its Instagram app. They own Instagram. And they put, video stories and some... And Instagram went through, started going up. Users and new users and user time online went up. And in Snapchat, exactly the same time, it went down. Not coincidentally, shortly after Snapchat's public offering, which must have embarrassed them a little bit. Actually, wasn't it right around then? It's kind of like Facebook plays hardball. So now they've announced all the same kind of filters. This is the platform now. Don't do that Snapchat thing. Do it in Facebook. And we'll see. Developers might be a little burned. They might be a little gun shy. Facebook's put them through the ringer. It's not exactly a stable platform, but that's the new platform. And people are excited because it's really the biggest company so far to say, we think augmented reality is it. Google did a little bit with Tango, but they didn't put all their weight behind it. It was kind of an experiment. This is Facebook saying, no, we're all in. We own Oculus Rift. We're going to do virtual reality, and we're going to do augmented reality. And, of course, the rumors are that Apple will copy them. Or you can't say copy because it takes a while to develop this stuff. It's just, it's an idea whose time has come. But Apple will start doing this when they put out the new iPhone in the fall. It'll be interesting to see if Google responds. Snapchat's going, you stole our stuff. The whole thing. Fortunately, there's a filter for that. Makes you a little baby. Tears come gushing out of your eyes. So it's easy to do that. It's, I don't mind companies stealing from one another and all of this competition and even the sharp elbows, because it's good for us as consumers. It's competition is good. It means we have more choice, but there's more innovation. We can just sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. That's what we're going to do next. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We got Michael Cozio at the turntables, spinning the discs. And look who's here, Kim Schaffer, answering the phones. Do you like your airplane?
I wish I had an airplane.
I wish I had an airplane, too. Wouldn't it be nice to have your own airplane?
I was just talking to Evan about that. He's going flying today.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it would be really nice to have your own airplane.
Lisa wants, she thinks, she's convinced, my wife is convinced that flying cars are in our future. I keep trying to.
I wouldn't mind that. You could avoid traffic.
Well, but if
there's
well,
a lot of traffic in the air.
Exactly. If everybody has flying cars, it's even worse.
Yeah.
How do you paint lanes in the air? Exit ramps. I think flying cars might happen, but they'll have to be autonomous. They'll self. You know, I don't. People can't drive their own flying cars. You have to let them drive themselves.
We thought watching the Jetsons that that would have happened.
Yeah.
Now.
Where's my Rosie the robot? Where's my dog walking treadmill? That's what I want to know. So you've been answering the phones. You got up early to answer the phones.
Yeah, very, very early.
Wow.
We're going to go up the road a piece to Ken in Windsor.
I like it.
Your help spending money for some monitors, multiple monitors.
Many, many monitors. Hi, thank you, Kim Schaffer. Hello, Ken.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
Very well. Beautiful day in Windsor today.
It certainly is. I need your help spending money.
Okay.
I work in an insurance office, and for years I've used multiple monitors on a PC, and I've never been satisfied with getting the layout correctly and the correct resolution and everything.
The problem to me is bezels, right? The frames around the monitor mean it's a discontinuous area.
Yes.
It's like you're looking through a window pane.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I decided to go with a 27-inch iMac, which
nice.
I absolutely
Isn't
love
it
the
stunning?
Resolution.
You got the 5K. Yeah. Beautiful.
Yep. And you're right. The Mac works as well as any PC I've ever owned.
Oh, absolutely.
Running boot camp. But I have a mess on my screen simply because it just doesn't manage all of the multiple windows that I have opened.
Since you're new to the Mac, I'm going to make a suggestion. There is a technique that Apple uses. Microsoft's adopted this in Windows 10. Linux has had it for years. Sometimes they call it workspaces. The idea is, you're right. I mean, if you try to put 10 windows on your screen, you're going to be digging through windows, right? So the idea is if you maximize a window on the Macintosh, go full screen on it, whether it's a browser, your email, whatever. If you go full screen on that window, it takes over that window. It has now created a workspace that window lives in by itself. There's nothing under it anymore. Now, it's not obvious because the window is blocking, but take my word for this. There's no longer anything under it. And then if you can, the easiest way to do this is hit the control left arrow and right arrow, and you'll go to the left workspace or the right workspace. So maximize your browser, then press control left, and all of a sudden there's a new desktop with no browser on it because your browser is over on the other desktop. These are virtual desktops, and you can have as many as you want. And frankly, the way I usually use the Mac is I maximize everything. I have which gives me a email workspace. You can use Exposé to do this, but I find this a much easier way to do it, and I kind of understand what's going on. If you want windows, make the windows smaller, and then you can have multiple windows on one screen. But I read an article on this that said, by a guy who said, I've used multiple monitors for years, and I never was productive with them, mostly because you can only really do one thing at a time. What you really want is an easy way to change tasks, to task switch. And I think this does it on a nice big monitor like yours very nicely. So press the control left arrow, and now maximize your email or whatever program you're using. If you use a loan program or whatever. And continue to do that till you have all the programs in their own workspace. Then control left or right arrow will completely change the screen as if you have a whole new screen in front of you.
Okay. That doesn't really solve what I'm trying to do. And the reason why is because I'm using data from different sources and need
So if you want multiple windows on the same screen, right?
Exactly,
yeah.
Yes.
And you can do that. There are third-party programs that do that. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I keep interrupting.
Yeah, well, for instance, I'm using a comparative rater to rate up a homeowner's policy,
right.
And I need the data out of Zillow to get the the specifications on the house, and I'm using an insurance company website and also my own database. So I might have four or five windows open at one time that I'm referencing data from all of those sources to compile the rates and so on.
You can still, yeah, so you can, so my Apple calls this, by the way, Spaces. I should give it the right name. And you can still have multiple windows in a space. You could still control arrow to a space, a desktop that has 18 windows open it if you want. So it's a way of organizing. I understand you want side-by-side windows. Also, OS 10, I don't think anybody knows this. They introduced it in Sierra, has Windows snapping, which means that you can take your two or three or four windows and snap them into place. You grab one and you drag it against the snap target, and you drag, once it snaps into place, you do that with the other windows, and you can create beautiful side-by-side or sometimes people call these tiled windows. That can be in one space, and then you still have your email in another space with control arrow. So you can organize a space with multiple windows. I think I maybe misguided you on that. It doesn't have to be a full window. I think the key on this is understanding, and it's not obvious. Apple does not make it obvious how spaces work. Alt-tab, once you set up the spaces, Alt-tab will also work. So you can Alt-tab. And one of the spaces can have as many windows in any organization you want, or as many spaces as you want.
Oh, that's terrific.
I think spaces is one of the best and least understood. I didn't understand it. I actually had to have somebody say, well, look, do this, and this. Oh. So read up on spaces and then snap. And there are third-party programs like Better Snap that do maybe a little bit better job. But I think if you just try the native stuff built into OS X, you'll be amazed. It's actually, I think you could argue with a nice screen like you have, you don't need multiple screens.
Got it. Okay.
But try it. Try the spaces command and play with it a little bit and see what you want.
Very good. That sounds excellent. Thank
yeah.
you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Yeah. I've kind of rethought. I have said for years, oh, multiple monitors is nirvana. And if you're a trader, you know, yeah. I admitted, home three monitors side by side, all 27 inches. That's a lot of screen real estate. And I keep messengers, you know, there's on the Mac, there's its own messages program, and then there's Google, and there's Facebook, and there's HipChat, and I have them all open. I keep a chat room open because our chat room is always going. But the truth is, that's not a, that's kind of an ADD way to work, right? Well, look over here, look over here. Look. It's not productive. I think what, and I read an article that said, and I think this is true, what you really want to do is get one screen and be productive within that one screen. Because you can't only do one thing at a time in reality. Multitasking means just time slicing it. Do one thing, then do another thing, then do another thing, and then go back to the original thing. So play with spaces and snap. I think the Macintosh has done it very well. What I think Apple's done poorly is explain this. You need, once somebody shows you, it's like, oh, Leo Lapointe, the tech guy. 8888, Ask Leo, the phone number. Brian in Fairview, Tennessee. Hello, Brian.
How are you doing?
I am well. How are you?
I'm hanging in like a hair in a biscuit.
Oh, my goodness. Is that a Tennesseeism?
Yes, and I've used it before on your show, believe it or not.
Oh, I love it.
Never gets old.
Come up with more of those. I love those. I love them.
I have one more. I learned this from a band member last night. I'm hanging in like snot on suede.
Oh, God. That's vaguely disgusting, but so is a hair and a biscuit, so.
Yeah, I know.
What can I do for you?
Well, you helped me a lot with, remember, the password manager LastPass.
Yes.
And again, about a year and a half ago, I switched to Mac, so I'm slowly over time. I've started this principle of, you know what, I want to learn everything on the Mac, use what the Mac has, learn it well, understand it, but I'm kind of ready to not use Mail anymore.
Yes, I'm kind of ready not to as well. What is it about Mail that you're tired of?
Well, I guess customization, and it's plain.
It is plain, isn't it?
Yeah, the big thing I am forced to use absolutely every day, I don't have a choice. And that is Outlook, because I work in IT, I work from home, yeah, or from the coffee shop with my laptop. And
God, I hate Outlook. I hate Outlook.
I have to use Windows. I run it in Parallels. My company doesn't know.
Yeah. Yeah, don't tell him. Yeah.
I'm supposed to be using my company laptop. But, oh, my gosh. 14-inch screen and
right.
Never mind.
Right.
So I'm using Windows 7 in Parallels. Works great.
Good.
Outlook is actually, it is on my list. I've evaluated a bunch of them. It is on my list. I kind of don't want to, but it does work well because one of the things I do like doing things that you can't really do in Mail is, for instance, if I get an email and that's a task, I can just drag it over to the task bar, it becomes a task, I'm good to go, and now I have a task, and I can do all that in Outlook.
Well, let me give you, the advantage of Outlook is it bundles everything into one big program. It's also the disadvantage.
And that's also the disadvantage.
Yes. And it's not how I prefer to go. So I can get, there are, what's interesting is even though Apple's come with Mail, there are surprisingly large number of third-party email programs. Now, I use one you probably won't like, but it's a power tool for Mail. And one of my most important criteria is that it support PGP encryption. And so that really eliminates a lot of stuff. Apple Mail does, and my preferred mail program is called MailMate. And all of these you can try for free. MailMate is free-ish. He asked for.
Well, that's on my list. That's number 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah,
four,
it probably should be far
7.
Down because it's kind of like an old. It's like Eudora. Remember Eudora? It's like an old-fashioned email program. As is Thunderbird, which is also available on the Macintosh. But there are more modern email programs that are interesting. Have you tried Airmail, for instance?
That is funny you should say that.
That's probably number one
on my list.
Yeah.
Because it's the most customizable.
It's beautiful, and it works well, and it handles tasks. Because one of the reasons you do want a task manager in email is many of the things you have to do come to you through email. So if you get an email, it's really nice to say, hey, that's now a task. So the best email programs will do that, and I do think that that's one of the features Airmail supports. Yeah. It's pretty.
I wonder how that works with PGP, and I also
it does not work with PGP. So if that's the only reason I don't use Airmail.
Mm.
I wish I think that this is something. If you're writing a mail client, it's just kind of. I think this is table stakes for a mail client is support encryption. If not PGP, then MIME, but some form of encryption. I just don't understand why you would leave that out. Probably because most people don't care. But take a look at Airmail, and I'm going to lobby them. And Airmail, has a send to menu that lets you use other to-do list programs if you want to send the email to that, as well as create calendar reminders. So in a way, it has that Outlook integration. It's just that you use three different programs.
Right. Well, one of the nicest things I have that I've learned from watching your show is Tidbits.
Love Tidbits.
And,
yep, they're great.
One of the things I got from them is Spam Sieve. It seems to work pretty well.
Spam Sieve will work with everything.
But I'm not sure how well that'll work with these other products.
Yeah, I think Spam Sieve will work with almost everything. That is one of the things that most email programs will support because it's just a standard on Macintosh. It's the number one Macintosh anti-spam tool. Now, I don't feel the need for anti-spam in my client because I use Gmail, which does probably the best job of spam fighting of anything.
I'm
You don't have to. I understand.
I'm so anti-Google.
I understand. You like using that Exchange server. That's fine.
Probably no.
Work may enforce that as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you don't want to use Gmail, I use a mail client called Fastmail. That is a web, but also a IMAP web client that does support the best spam filtering of all, Spam Assassin. And you can write your own scripts. So, I don't do client-side spam fighting. I don't want it to be in my inbox at all. So I just have it removed at the server.
Right.
Whether it's
Spam Assassin, that sounds like, I think a lot of websites use that.
Yes, yes, it's server-side.
Right, exactly.
So, I would take a look at Airmail. I think MailMate is like a power tool. You can write the very elaborate rules, and the people who email is now feeling like a very antiquated technology, isn't it? Everybody's using Slack and HipChat, and they're messaging each other and stuff. But I really like the ability to take email. I get a lot of email, and I love having powerful filters that organize it for me.
Yeah. You know what the problem with that is, though, and I don't know if you've noticed this, but I know I noticed it in the IT world, especially with large companies. and ours is a large company. Ours is the largest not-for-profit health system in the United States. And that is, we're always behind. So...
it's like the government. It's like the government.
We're still running on Windows 7.
Yeah. No, but that's not a bad thing. If you're a big enterprise, that's fine. You don't want to be, you know, using the latest and greatest all the time because it breaks a lot.
Oh, but if in our enterprise, though, if email went down, literally probably 75% of the work would come to a ceasing halt.
Yeah. No, that's right. A lot of business, it's too bad, but the startups are all using Slack and programs like it.
Yeah, Slack is pretty cool, especially for an old guy like me. I started using Atlas Recall, and because I was one of the early users, they're big on a development group that's in Slack.
Yeah.
And it's just, that's what everybody wants nowadays is instantaneous.
I just talked to Jordan Ritter, who's the creator of Atlas, and he's an old school hacker. I've known this guy for 20 years, and really... Yeah. Interesting, this Atlas Recall. This is another topic for Mac users. It watches everything you do, which, I mean, if you're worried about Google, I'm surprised you're using Atlas Recall.
Here's how that worked out, because what I am pressing them for, and they've promised me they're working on it, and that is because, you know, the running joke right now is if you want the NSA to know everything you're doing, just load Recall onto your computer.
No, but Jordan's very clear, and the reason I trust Jordan is because he's kind of anti-establishment.
So right. What they're saying, we're working on it. It's coming. Just relax and wait. And that is zero knowledge. They're hoping.
Yes.
The idea is it
sees everything you do and puts it in a database that you can search. And of course, the ideal would be only you can see what's in that database. And I do believe they're going that way. Yeah.
And it'll obviously go to where you pay probably be a monthly fee, but I don't mind that. If it's zero knowledge, I don't mind it. So
we did. Let me point you to an interview I did with him on our show called Triangulation about 2 months ago, where he talks about
That's the one I watched. Found out about Recall.
That's where he talks about the roadmap for this. It's atlas.co if you want to know more. It's only Mac right now. He does plan to do Windows and. There's a Windows 10 beta coming, and interesting idea, though. Reminds me of the old days, like programs like X1 that would just keep track of everything you did and let you find it quickly. Brian, a pleasure talking to you. Let me know if you find a good email program. I love to hear about that on the Mac. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Yeah, I'm always looking for good email clients for the Mac. I'm very happy with the MailMate. So, but I'm curious what your experience is with others. Always looking for that. That's two Mac questions in a row. Wow. How about let's go for three. Greg is on the line from Aspen Park, Colorado. Hello, Greg.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm fine. I have a business, an employee that had has a PC that's been with Windows 7 32-bit.
Yes, sir.
And she... downloaded, as a lot of people have Windows 10 without meaning to, and we got 32-bit Windows 10 on the machine. Yeah, but it's a 64-bit processor, and, I want her to be able to utilize the additional RAM.
Yeah, that's the only reason, by the way, to worry about 32 versus 64.
So my question is, if I either download it by disk, Windows 10 64-bit, and install that, is it going to be seamless, or is it going to erase everything?
I'm going to ask the chat room to correct me if I'm out of date on this, but it's my understanding, and I remember from the older times, that you can't do that, that you have to start from scratch. You can't just install Windows 64-bit on top of Windows 32-bit. I think you have to format and install. That's my. It used to be that way, and I don't know if Windows 10 maybe solved that issue or not.
Mm-hmm.
Chat room. Everybody's agreeing. Yep, you got to wipe it.
Okay,
so that means you got to back up her data. You've got to make sure that you have all the applications she wants, so you can reinstall them.
Yeah.
And then start over.
I'll just fire her and buy a new
Oh Lord! Don't blame it on me. Don't blame it on me.
Actually, that is my plan. Thanks for the help.
Sorry for the bad news. Yeah. But I have to be clear that despite the fact that, I mean, everything's 64-bit now. Even iOS is 64-bit. In fact, Apple has taken kind of an unusual step of notifying people when you run an older 32-bit application on the iPhone or the iPad. You've seen it, probably.
This program may slow your system down.
Which it doesn't. And the most recent version, I think, is going to—I had heard it was going to stop running 32-bit, but maybe it'll be the next version. It's going to stop running 32-bit software entirely. But there isn't that much difference. What is 32 versus 64? What is that? So it really comes down to the way the programs, or rather the microprocessor stores the chunks of data it's working on. Early microprocessors had, they're called registers, and they had a they have a number of registers, four, sometimes eight registers, that can hold a chunk of data. The size of that chunk of data is what we're talking about. And the early processors were 8-bit processors. That means one byte at a time. Now, the truth is, that's for most of what you do, that's enough, because one byte represents a character. One byte is, you know, if you do it very, very quickly enough, you know, you can work on things a chunk at a time. But it wasn't very long, maybe 20 years ago, we started moving to 16-bit computing. By the way, that did allow now 16 bits or 2 bytes for characters, and that's when the Unicode standard replaced ASCII. And thanks to that, we have emojis. So you can thank 32-bit processors for emojis. That meant that they would do 2 bytes at a time in their registers. If you had, you know, megabytes of data, you just process it 2 bytes at a time. It wasn't a big deal. These processors are very fast. They're operating, those processors were operating millions of operations a second. We're now doing we're doing billions of operations a second. Billions. So, you know, billions of 32-bit chunks, that's not so bad. However, newer processors have larger registers, 64-bit, which is, you know, that's 4 bytes. And so they can handle data in larger chunks. Does that make a difference? It doesn't. It might make it faster if you're operating over a large set of data, but not much. And most of the time, you're using characters, which are 16 bits. So you're not even using all those extra bits. It's just, you know, not used. There's zeros. So the one thing that does make a difference is if you're using a 32-bit operating system, it uses 32-bit memory addressing, which means it can't address more than 4 gigabytes of memory. So if you have a machine with more than 4 gigs of RAM, you won't see the additional RAM unless you use a 64-bit operating system. That's, as I mentioned to him, probably the only reason to make this move, because you have more than 4 gigs of RAM. So there you go. There you go. I mean, does it make a difference in speed? Not really. More RAM does, but 64-bit processor by itself. In fact, you can make the argument, and in some cases this is in fact true, that a processor that handles larger chunks has more overhead. It's wasted. So in many operations, 64-bit processors are slower, believe it or not. Doug in St. Louis, Missouri. Hello, Doug.
Hello.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Welcome.
How you doing today, Leo?
I am very well. What's up?
Well, I'm on my in-laws' computer, and they're trying to log into Facebook. And
are you sorry you went over there today?
No, actually, I just use TeamViewer. It's nice.
Oh, nice. So you're their IT guy.
Right.
Okay. So they can't get into Facebook?
Well, this message pops up saying that there's been malware detected, and I know that's not the case.
Right.
I
mean, that's a spurious message people get all the time, and it almost always says, call this phone number, and then you call.
No, this is download ESET scanner.
Okay, another one, download something. It's going to get their money somehow. If they're not running ESET, how would ESET know they got malware?
Well, I don't know. It's tied into Facebook because it works just fine in Edge, but on Chrome is where we're having the problem.
So whenever they go to Facebook, you get this pop-up?
Yeah, and it's, I've Googled it. It's kind of a common thing through Facebook, it sounds like. I don't know if they're partnered with ESET.
They're not.
Fashion.
They're not, no.
I don't know.
You've got some Chrome extension, some malicious Chrome extension installed.
Deleted all the cookies, you know, cleared all the history and all.
Look
the
at your extensions. Go into more tools and look at your extensions.
The only extensions that they have are the LastPass and.
Good. You set them up.
Another one.
I'm glad to hear that. Then, let's see, how else could you do it? You know, maybe the best thing to do is just to reset Chrome so it deletes everything. And
right.
And then that, I can't imagine that it'll persist through that. You don't get it on Edge.
No, and I haven't tried Firefox yet, so I don't know.
Yeah,
there,
it sounds,
other people have
it
been
sounds
able to
like Chrome has been hijacked in some interesting way. So if you just select settings and then search for reset in the search box, reset settings, you can just reset the settings. Now, remember, that's going to wipe out everything like cookies and, you know, everything that.
Right, yeah.
That's, well, you already started that process anyway. And if there's a browser hijacker object or some sort of extension that it's running that's not visible, restoring the settings will just zap everything.
I ran Malwarebytes as well, and it didn't find anything.
Yeah, it's in Chrome. It's a Chrome hijacker. And I think if you reset the settings, you should see it go away. Give it a try. That's the easiest thing to do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, and all that jazz. 8888, ask Leo the phone number. So now I'm seeing a surprising notice from Facebook. Facebook and ESET partner to combat malware. ESET is the antivirus program that actually we advertised for years. It's a good company. I like their service. But I got to understand. So this actually was 3 years ago. So I've never seen this on Facebook. So I'm not sure what the deal is, unless Facebook sees something on your system. We've worked with ESET, they write, to incorporate their finely tuned security software directly into our existing abuse detection and prevention systems. Together, these three systems will help us block malicious links and harmful sites. See, I don't think that means you're going to see ESET pop up. I think that's behind the scenes. And it looks like they're using other companies, F-Secure and Trend Micro. So what's really happening is Facebook is running their antivirus software on their servers to check links before they post them. That's a good thing. I don't think that's related to the pop-up, though, you're seeing. One of the things ESET does that I'm not fond of, and most antivirus companies do this, is they support resellers. It's a way of marketing where a website will get a percentage of sales if they recommend ESET. So you have a lot of people pushing ESET. They're going to make money on it, but they aren't really controlled by the corporation. And it'd be my guess that that's what our last – so, by the way, if you're just tuning in, you're probably confused what I'm talking about. Our last caller last hour said his parents, his in-laws, were getting pop-ups from an antivirus company called ESET on their, every time they went to Facebook. But it only happened on Chrome. Didn't happen on other browsers. I think that's more likely, not from ESET, but coming from maybe a reseller, they call them affiliates, and somebody, maybe an overly aggressive ESET affiliate is putting out, you know, browser hijacker objects that pop up advertisements for ESET. I'm sure he makes a lot of money doing it, but that's malware, and you should remove it for sure. 8888, ask Leo the phone number. All right, let's move on to new topics, starting in Texas with Tom. He's in Mesquite. Hey, Tom.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Love your show. I have a case where I have a friend who needs a security camera in her apartment, and so I went out and I purchased a camera called a GER, Gary 960 IP camera, fisheye.
Okay.
And it's a great camera. The only problem, you know, it does a 360-degree, and you connect to the internet, you can watch a video, you can create videos. It's a great camera. The problem I run into in this apartment, this person doesn't have internet. So they will eventually, but what I'm looking for is a camera that I can hook into her apartment and be able to just, you know, create videos to an SD card. something that doesn't require internet access. Something
you want it to record locally, and then at some other point you go and look at the recording.
Yeah, the problem I run into, a lot of these cameras I've looked at that have like 1 hour access, or they'll have a battery for 9 hours, maybe 8 hours, which is actually pretty good. The question is there anything out there I can just plug into the wall and run a, create a, set up two or three cameras, just record them to local SD cards and not have to record internet?
Sure there are. You'd have to go around collecting the SD cards, but you could do that. Most of the time people who want to do that record to a central DVR style recorder, but then you have to have wires going, you have to have a network set up. The lack of a Wi-Fi network really makes this a little bit more challenging. But what you're talking about is really has been around for years. It's called closed circuit television, right? In a way, right? Just recording it. That's what you see if you go to the 7-Eleven up in the screen there. They're not sending that out to the internet. They're recording it. A lot of times they're recorded on a VCR, a DVR in the back. Or in tapes.
Well, I can set up a local network, which is fine inside the apartment, but as far as going outside the apartment, that's really not an option.
Right. Yeah. No, and that's fine. In fact, there are a number of ways to do that. Synology, which is a network. I mean, this is all budgetary, right? How much do you want to spend? You're right. The cheapest thing would be to buy little mountable cameras that recorded locally. And I'm just not familiar with, I'm kind of internet focused, so I'm not familiar with SD card security cameras. Let me see if the chat room has any suggestions for something. I'm looking, though, online, and I see a million of these.
The problem with the cameras that I see, they'll record for an hour. Some of them require, most of them require batteries. And I'm just
The theory there is that most of these will only record when there's motion. You don't need the camera, since she's not on the internet, you don't want the camera to record nothing. You want it to record something when there's motion. So cameras that can run on batteries and run a really long time if they only turn on when they see something. Somebody's suggesting these this is an interesting idea. The nature cameras, they're designed to be put on trees and catch wildlife as it goes by.
Wildlife,
yeah, Bushnell, for instance, makes a nature view camera. Has longer battery life, records locally. Except instead of the wildlife being lions and tigers and bears, you're trying to catch crooks in the action. But it would work the same way. So that's an interesting
They're kind of hard to hide, right?
You want to hide them too.
Well, you don't really want people to know that you're being watched by a camera if you're in the apartment.
I'll have to say I'm going to have to punt on this because I don't. I don't cover this. I don't know of any non-Wi-Fi. What you want is a non-Wi-Fi camera.
Well, even if I set up a Wi-Fi, right, I can have a Wi-Fi with it.
Yeah, you can have an ad hoc Wi-Fi access point. Yeah, that's true. It could just join your own Wi-Fi server. That's a good point. I'm a big fan.
I've got a router, and you set up a router for local Wi-Fi.
Right.
And that's what I did with that camera. The problem I ran into is I went on the cell phone and went in and logged into their internet site. That went okay, but when I tried to set up a hotspot and tried to get the camera to log into it, it couldn't communicate between the internet as well as a hotspot.
Right.
So it couldn't really retrieve the data.
Yeah, I'm not familiar. I'm sure there are a number of these products. Tell you what, I'm going to punt, ask the chat room. I've heard very good things about a very inexpensive camera from Xiaomi, which is a Chinese company, XIAOMI. They make something called the Yi Cam. And these are really inexpensive cameras. I bought the Yi Action Cam. It's their GoPro clone, and I was very happy with it. The Yi Cams are IP-based. They're small. They're inexpensive, like $40. But, again, you could probably set up an inexpensive local network that would it would record to. The nice thing about that, if it recorded to a server, you could go back and look and you'd have a lot more information. I would take a look at those. I've heard very good things about them. They're $40 each on Amazon right now. Y-I, the Yi Cam. And I'm sure there's more choices that that are small, battery power, but last a while. These are the criteria you want, and that you can't really see them. They're not designed for being on the internet. They're designed for recording locally. Anybody have some suggestions? Either call 8888-ASK-LEO or visit us in the chat room, or go to the website, techguylabs.com. And what I suggest, Tom, is you check back and see if we've got an answer for you at techguylabs.com. Al in Columbia, South Carolina is coming up next. He's got a Mac on its last legs, and he's interested in switching to a Chromebook? Well, let's talk about it when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. Ryan in Anaheim. Hi, Ryan. Leo Laporte here.
Hi, how you doing?
I am well, Ryan.
I had a question about the HTC Ultra U that you bought.
Yes.
I wanted to get your opinion on it because you never got back to your listeners about your...
Yeah, I often don't do reviews of phones that I think are not going to be... not going anywhere, and that phone is not going anywhere.
you don't think it's worth the sale right now for $150 off?
Ah, and now I'm not surprised because I don't think they probably got a lot of pickup. It's a big phone. I like the screen. It disappoints me in one respect. HTC was famous for putting great front firing speakers on their phone. They started that with the HTC One. This has the worst, tiniest little bottom firing speaker, and that's it. So if that's what you like HTC for, this is not a good choice. It also crashed a lot. Now, I don't know if that was the unit I bought or if it's a general problem, but my sense is the software is kind of crashy. I think if you're going to spend that much money on a phone, now, of course, $150 might change it, but if you're going to spend that much money on a phone, I'd much rather get the Samsung Galaxy S8.
Well, I have the Axon 7 per your recommendation, and I have the HTC M7. And the HTC M7 just dies and dies and dies. It will not stay charged. It only lasts for about 20 minutes because, like you said, it's a brick phone, so it doesn't last at all. But it's like I like the HTC, but it's like same thing with the camera.
Ultra is not like any HTC before it, which is too bad because they had a great design, I think, a great design sense. I love the front-firing speakers. I thought the HTC One and its successors, the M7, M8, were great. This is not. It was a little bit disappointing. I think it's aimed not at the U.S. market, more aimed at the Asian market. I'm not sure, but I don't feel like it's a great phone. So I haven't spoken a lot more about it since then, especially since it's been eclipsed, by the Samsung S8. S8 is not perfect either. I mean, I've only had a couple of days, but if there's hesitation, which Samsung was famous for years, I thought they'd licked this. They have not. It has a fingerprint reader that just is poorly placed and shaped, and this weird Bixby button that only kind of half works. This was Samsung's best effort. What they've done is a great screen, and I really think that the future, and this is the main reason I'm less interested in the HTC Ultra, the future of high-end flagship phones. And it's marked by this, the LG G6, and what Apple will do this fall is what we call a bezel-less design. The screen has very little frame. And I think that anything less will start to look pretty out of date in the next 6 months because all the new phones will go all the way to the edge. And I'll tell you, it's a great way to go. You get a phone that isn't much bigger, but a screen that is. And this, for instance, this is a 6.2-inch screen in the Galaxy S8 Plus, the big version. But the phone itself is the same size as the iPhone 7 Plus, which only has a 5.5-inch screen. So they got a lot more screen in a not bigger area. I feel like that's if you're going to spend $750 to $850 for a phone, a flagship phone, that's the kind of thing you're looking for. I'm rooting for HTC. I really am. I love HTC, but I think that they missed the boat with the U Ultra. So I can't recommend that. Right now, I was thinking that the Samsung Galaxy S8 would be the Android phone going forward. I'm no longer thinking that. I think you should look at if you're going to get a clunkier phone, the Axon 7 was a great phone. There are a lot of the OnePlus 3T. There are a lot of very good $400 phones that are as good, I think. And my favorite is still the champion It once again is the Google Pixel. The Pixel or the Pixel XL, which is the larger of the two. Design, very pedestrian. Not a great-looking phone. But the software is the best. It's the best iteration of Android out there. So that is my kind of remains my pick. And I'm thinking I'm probably going to wait for the Pixel 2, which won't be out till this fall in all likelihood. But I think that may end up being the best phone of this year. So HTC U Ultra, not so much. $150 less would make it $600. That's more. If they got it down, you know, and they may, because I don't think it's selling well. If they got down to $450 or $500, it'd be a great choice. It'd be a very good choice. I liked the Axon 7. It's not surprising that you liked it as well, because it was remind me a lot of the HTC M7. Somebody in the chat room, Baraboo, says, Android's sort of like a rental car lot. Yeah, there's variety. And some of them are clunkers. Some of them are cherries. They're all a little weird. All a little funky. I think Google's the best way to go still. Sad to say, because you know, Google, now the functionality is excellent and the camera is excellent. It's just that the phone design, but how important? If design's important, then you're going to get the Samsung Galaxy S8. If software is important, you're going to get the Google Pixel. Those are in the high end, the choices. Kathy in Calabasas, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Thank you. We love your show. My husband and I listen to you every week.
Thanks for listening. That's nice. Thank
right.
you.
I wanted to ask you a question.
Yes.
I have the the Samsung Note 5.
Excellent phone.
Oh, I have loved it for about a year and a half. I got it about a year and a half ago.
And you skipped the Note 7, which was smart.
Yes, I skipped that. I skipped that. You know, when I like a phone, I keep it for a long time.
Yeah, as you should.
But a couple of days ago, they did a software update.
Uh-oh.
Oh, my God.
Did they ruin it?
They ruined it.
What did they do?
They ruined it, and I have had so many software updates, and it's always been fine. You know, it's kind of been in the background. I never really even noticed
it. Did they move you to Android 7, or was it just a smaller...
I think it's called Nougat.
Nougat. They nougatized you.
They nougatized
you. And you don't like Nougat.
Hate it. Oh, it just ruined my phone.
What don't you like about Nougat?
Okay, well, first of all, they've never messed with the interface before.
Yeah.
Colors and icons and how the messages look. And,
yeah.
Now they've totally messed with everything, and I don't know why. The colors are terrible. The message screen is completely white. The icons are completely white. It is so horrible looking. And then when you do your messages, when you type your texts, if it's long, what it does is cut it off halfway, and it says, "Would you like to or you want to see more?"
I want to see the whole thing, please.
Yes.
The whole thing. I don't want to. Page my text message
for fun here. I want to see more.
Sounds like so. Nougat, by the way, is widely considered to be a nice improvement on Android. But you got more than Nougat. You got the new Samsung interface, TouchWiz, and I think we can fix this. But I'm going to have to take a break. Hang on the line, if you will.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thanks, Leo.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, coming up next. So, yeah, I mean, it did, you know, I think what happened is they updated TouchWiz, which is the Samsung gloss that they put on top of Android 7, and it doesn't sound very attractive.
Oh, it's terrible. Leo, I can't even believe it. I called Verizon because I didn't realize it's a Samsung thing. I called Verizon and I complained. And
good, you should, because they'll give Samsung feedback.
Oh, I just went on and on how much I hated it. And then when I was trying to get you on the line, I Googled you know, the my question into Google and got all kinds
you're
of.
You're not alone, huh?
Yeah, that I'm not alone, right? And you know, one gal said exactly what I said. I hate it in big capital letters. Why did they mess with something that was so nice?
So what I'm seeing is this is a update called Grace.
Okay, let me write this.
That's all they had?
Yeah, Lisa said small.
No. Oh well, thank you. No, I don't know why she said small. I'm talking to somebody else. I'm sorry.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so they put this new Grace UI on here. Now, the good news is Samsung is pretty themeable.
Uh-huh.
So if you go into the Samsung app, you'll see that they have a variety of other themes you can do, which will change. You can change the font size. You can change the background colors. I don't know if you'll be able to get it back to the old Note 5 way of things.
I did change my, you know, I did go in, I'm not, you know, I'm not that familiar with it, but I can go into the settings, and I went into wallpaper, and I, you know, and
yeah.
But the wallpaper doesn't do a thing to my message screen at all, and it doesn't do a thing to that stupid thing where it says, do you want to read more of your text, for God's sakes?
Yeah, I don't blame
believe
you.
Believe it when I see that. You know, I'm thinking... Well, of course. Why do you think I'm typing this? You know.
So you got you. This new user interface is actually the same one as they're shipping now with the Galaxy S8. So I'm looking at the same UI. You probably first of all, you can use the beauty of Android, and even this Android is it's very customizable. So, for instance, you don't have to use Samsung's messaging app. You could use Google's messaging app, Android Messenger, and it would behave differently and look differently, have different themes. And you can tell the Samsung in the apps settings, there's a menu you drop down that says default apps, and you could say, I want Android Messenger to be my SMS app, not your stupid Samsung Messenger. And that'll give you a whole different look. And there are many other third-party SMS programs, and there's a whole variety you can use.
And you can sort of change things around.
Change it at will. You can make it look like any... No. It's just an app. And
okay.
The only trick is that you have to tell the phone, this is my default. This is what I want. When SMS, when text messages come in, they should go to this program.
Uh-huh.
And you do that in the app settings, and it's kind of hidden.
I didn't know that.
There's a menu up in the corner, like a little three-dot menu you click, and it'll let you choose the default apps. And there's default apps for the browser, for the messenger, for a few other programs. So you can change, like you say, I don't want Chrome. I don't want Samsung's internet. I want Chrome. You can change those things around. You can also theme it, which means you can change its look considerably, including black backgrounds if you want. But it sounds like your biggest problem is that the messenger is just dotting you.
Oh, it's just. It's very unattractive. And even,
yes, I
even
agree with you. I don't like it.
Colors, you know, of the text messages themselves.
All of that can be changed. And I would even try a different messaging program and see which one you like better, because it can all be changed. You can even change the launcher, the look of the launcher. I don't use Samsung's TouchWiz launcher. I use something called Action Launcher that's more customizable.
Action Launcher, let me look.
So Android will let you do anything you want. Unlike an iPhone, you know, where it's Apple's way or the highway, you can customize that and you can make it look better or worse.
Oh, okay.
But you just need to start getting customizing in it.
Oh, because the Verizon gal said that, you know, because I wanted to revert back to...
Well, she doesn't have any control. Hey, I've got to run.
Okay.
But Kathy, play with that.
So
my pleasure. My pleasure.
I appreciate it so much.
Take
and
care.
One more quickie?
No, I got to go. I can't. I have to do Chris Marquardt. That magic music means but one thing. It's time for Chris Marquardt, the photo guy. He joins us every week to talk about digital photography and help us become better photographers. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Leo.
Welcome,
how are you today?
Welcome to the show. I'm very well. I see your Tibetan flags hanging behind you. Do you have any souvenirs of Lake Baikal back there?
No, I didn't put anything up there, but I might.
A piece of ice or something, you know?
A big piece of ice, yeah,
glacier.
Exactly.
So what do you want to talk about today?
I just finished holding a 2-day workshop about people photography, and I just want to talk about let's put this into that secret superpower thing. Let's talk about a secret superpower: how to take great photos of people.
I need this. This is my favorite thing to take pictures of. Is people. Yeah.
And it's one of the toughest things because people are they're not patient.
They're shy.
They might not even want their photo to be taken. A lot of people will say, "I always look horrible on photos. The camera adds 10 pounds and that kind of stuff." Everyone has heard that. So it's and I'm not talking about the candid shots like you're around with your friends and around your family and you just take a snap here and there. I'm talking about more like deliberate photo sessions where you really like spend time with someone to take photos, maybe for
like portraits. I don't
know, for someone's website or like a real portrait session or someone's website or someone's avatar or I don't know. There are lots of reasons to do that, but getting people to be natural in front of the camera, getting people to be themselves in front of the camera is one of the most difficult things because they are not used to it.
We're self-conscious.
People always look at themselves in the mirror. Yeah, we're very self-conscious. Yeah. And also, there is a weird kind of power balance. You are behind the camera. You have all the power. The person in front of the camera is kind of at your mercy there, right?
Yeah.
You see where I'm going there? It's a bit of a...
They're afraid you're going to make them look bad.
Exactly. And it's a situation where people kind of feel a bit helpless. And so getting people to be themselves in front of the camera is, I would call it an exercise in building trust. And that's what you have to do as a photographer. If there's no trust, you won't get good photos. There will be tension. People in front of the camera will have their shields up, especially if they are not a professional model. They're not experienced in front of the camera. So there are a few ways to build that trust. And the first one is, well, of course, involve them in that process, right? It's a process. It's not just you setting up the camera, taking photos and going away. And for me, that means I will talk to them upfront. Maybe about, is there anything you like about yourself? What are the things that you like photos of yourself? Do you have a photo that you like yourself on? Oh. If you look at that and then you get to talk to them and say, oh, that's one. And then you might also be, that might also be a good way to find out if someone doesn't like their nose, for example, which is not unusual.
No one likes their nose. And if you still think you like your nose, you just haven't looked at it lately.
And that's a good way to find that out and kind of be able to react to that. So involve them in the process early if you can. Second thing is, of course, while you do the photography, talk to them. That's kind of key. If you're in front of the camera and that person behind the camera is just digging their head behind into all those buttons and menus and dials and trying to figure out how to work the technology, that's not going to be helpful. As a photographer, I do explain what I'm doing. I tell them, I need to set the camera up so we get the good light and we get the nice colors. We want to make your skin look pretty. We want to let's move a bit over to that side because in the shade there is a nicer light. It won't be as harsh. It will make you look good and it's a nice background behind you. So talk to people. Give them information on what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Do you say things like, love the camera, you're beautiful, babe, you're beautiful?
No.
Yeah,
exactly. No, that's
okay.
I think that's a cliche. I'm not even sure that photographers
Nobody
in the studio
that.
Will do that. No, not really. I think that's from cartoons.
Okay.
So, of course not. Of course not. No, it's a process, and both sides are involved in that process, and both sides have to be at ease in order to make this work.
Makes sense.
The next thing is give some clear instructions. Don't just let them sit there and take photos. I will often say things like, move your head a bit up. Oh, yeah, that's nicer from that angle. Look a bit to the right. Point your nose a bit to the left, but the eyes to the right. Give them some clear instructions so they don't feel lost in front of the camera. Now, the next thing is, and here comes the secret weapon, and that's the display on your camera. The moment you got a good photo of them, show them. Involve them. That takes away a lot of the mistrust because now you let them see what you're actually doing.
It reassures them. And yes.
It definitely does. And that kind of adjusts that balance of power I talked about earlier. Now you're giving them some power back. And you will also give them a chance to say, oh, I don't really like that one. Let me see that other one again. Oh, yeah, I like myself much more in that one. And last but not least, and that's one of the things that I've had to learn over the years, but it works really well. You know, when you're doing poses, okay, let's go to this side, and then you spend 10 minutes there trying different things, and then you go to another side, another place, and then in between those poses, in between those kind of stretches of time where you take the photos, there's always some downtime in between those. And in that downtime, that's usually where people in front of the camera let their shields down. That's where they become themselves. Mm-hmm. During those poses, they're often a bit tense and a bit afraid of what's happening. And during those little short time frames between those poses, that's when the shields come down. That's when people become themselves. And if you're ready as a photographer, if you don't let your shields down, if you are ready to take photos at that point, you'll just have to watch. People will let their guard down. They will be themselves, and then clack, 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 take a few photos.
And maybe you don't say, you don't go, surprise! No, you don't do that.
No, of course not. Just snap a few in between the poses, and more often than not, those are the pictures that will then survive and will come out as the good ones.
That's true, isn't it?
Kind of between the poses, that's where the magic happens.
Yep, that's really true.
So that's what we did on the weekend.
The best, I find the best photographers of people are people who either like people or can pretend they like people. And gregarious, I mean. And I'm not very gregarious. I'm, believe it or not, kind of shy. So I have to force myself. But I just play it. I play that role, right? You pretend to be a gregarious person.
The other thing that also helps is if you are able to pretend that you're in full control of that camera.
Yeah, like I know what I'm doing. Not, yeah, no, often, yeah.
You may be going,
never help, admit and, that you have no idea what you're
somewhere
doing.
Somewhere in your head. No, exactly. But at least try to convey that feeling of I'm in full control here, because that will also make the other side of the camera a bit more trusting.
It's true. It's true. You know, sometimes, though, you only have minutes or seconds to get that great shot. And so I think I think that this is a skill. It's a real skill. And I don't want
to. Yeah, but you have to, as with every skill, practice every now and then, or as often as you can. And then you will become much, much better.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you who is very good at what he does, and you can find out more about it and even take classes, as you can tell from him. It's Chris Marquardt. His website for all of his workshops, discoverthetopfloor.com, discoverthetopfloor.com. You'll find photographs there, books. He's got a great book about film photography. And we have an assignment, do we not, Chris?
We do. The assignment is SET, S-E-T.
SET.
Whichever that, whatever that might mean
what
to you.
What does that mean to you?
It can be a lot of different things.
Set. All right. Well, here's what happens. You take a picture illustrating the word or concept, set, S-E-T, whatever that means to you, and you upload it to Flickr. We have a tech guy group there that's just ready for your brilliant submission. So go on up there and post it. In a couple of weeks, Chris will pick three that he likes, and we'll talk about it on the radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Nice. Nice. I like it.
Good.
Yeah, it's because I'm shy. That's really the problem. I got to pretend to be gregarious.
In this case, we're talking about just a really deliberate session, not one of these candid ones or a street one. So in the streets, that's much harder because you'll be shy.
You don't have time.
Kind of intimidated.
Yeah. Cool.
And you don't have much time. But in this case, you... a nice photo session, an hour long.
All my best photos are of Lisa because I'm not shy with my wife. She's a great model. She's beautiful. So it really, those are all my best pictures. And I know her very well, so I can get her in a, you know, I know when she's going to look great. So.
And she's taking photos of you?
Yes. I don't know. I'm not going to put words in her mouth. She's a much better photographer than I am. Thank you, Chris.
All right.
Have a good day. All right. See you later.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK Leo. I'm sorry we had to, abruptly end our call with our caller right before Chris Marquardt, because we were talking about Android. And one of the things that I like about Android, and one of the things I think some people don't like about Android, is it's almost infinitely customizable. With an iPhone, you know, it's pretty much that way. You can't change a lot. You can only change the things Apple lets you change, the wallpaper, for instance. But you can't change the icons, the shape of the icons. You can't change the launcher that you use. You have to use their Springboard launcher. They're just, it's, but that's Apple's way of doing things. Their position is, we spend a lot of time and effort and we think very hard about how things should be on a platform, whether it's their computers or their phones or their tablets, and we design it as best we can to be just right. And that's that. Android is very loosey-goosey. You know, the operating system was acquired by Google. It was created by a guy named Andy Rubin. His company, Android, was sold to Google, which then did an interesting thing. They said, we're going to open source this software. We're going to let other people have access to it, use it for free, modify it in any way they choose. And so there is a version of Android called AOSP, the Android Open Source Project, I think, AOSP, that anybody can use. I could use it. I could design a phone, put an Android on it. The problem is that most of what you expect from Android has to do with Google. Without Google services, you know, Android is a very different beast. So Amazon, for instance, took AOSP, the open source, freely available Android, customized it and made their Fire operating system. It's based on Android. It's free to them. They didn't license it from Google. Google let them use it because it's an open source project. But if they had wanted to have the Google Play Store, for instance, on there and other Google features like Google Maps, they'd have had to pay a license fee. And there's all sorts of rules about what you have to do if you want to sell a phone with Android plus Google services. And most of the phones you buy, including that Samsung phone, LG phones, HTC phones, they're all Android plus Google services. So the Google services are on there. Many of these companies, in order to differentiate, will add stuff. Not merely different hardware, but different software. So Samsung has its own messaging program. And because they're using Google services, they're required to also include Android Messenger on there. They have their own voice assistant, Bixby. But they also include Google's voice assistant, Google Assistant. It's actually, I don't think it's a great system because now you have two of everything on your phone and you kind of have to pick and choose. And in order to make Samsung phones different from LG phones, even though they're running the same operating system, Samsung modifies the user interface considerably. So does LG. So does HTC. They all do it. And in fact, I think users have pretty clearly indicated we want kind of a pure Android look, the kind that Google ships on its phones, the Pixel, and Motorola ships on its phones. But most of the big brand name Android phones are highly customized. And I think Android did something of a disservice to our caller because, or Samsung did, because they updated the Android on there. And while updating the Android, they did something they didn't have to do, but did. They completely changed how the user interface looked. That's not because of Android. That's because of Samsung. They said, well, no, we're going to now give you our new Grace UX, they call it. The Grace user experience, which is very different. It's what's on the Samsung S8. I guess they'd like all their phones to look the same. But I can understand if somebody who's used a Note 5 for 3 years and it's all of a sudden looks completely different, many people would say, well, what? Put it back. But you can't. There are those of us who would say, oh, something fresh and shiny and new. Ooh, ooh, ooh. In fact, most of the tech press does that. But I don't think they reflect really how real people feel. They say, I just wanted it the way it was. I really like this phone. Why did you change it? And there's no good answer to that. They didn't have to change it, but they did. That way, everything looks the same. The very good news is that Android, unlike Apple, is much more open, can be changed in all sorts of ways. For instance, if you don't like the way the home screen and the icons look, you can use a different launcher. You can literally install a program that completely changes the look. There are lots of very nice launchers available for Android. I mentioned I use one called Action Launcher. For years, I used Nova Launcher. Microsoft has its own launcher. Yeah, Microsoft makes a launcher for Android. There's Eevee. There's ADW. I can go on and on. There are lots of different launchers. So in a way, that's overwhelming to some people. Like, I don't want that many choices. Action Launcher is kind of a power tool. It's my favorite. For a simpler look and lots of functionality, Nova Launcher. And Samsung themselves offer a variety of themes, so you can change the fonts, the colors. You can customize it quite a bit. And as I mentioned, you don't have to use the default apps. You don't have to use Samsung's apps. You don't have to use Google's apps. In case of SMS text messaging, there are a dozen other. There's Textra and Cool Messages. And Android Messages comes from Google. And you can even use Facebook Messenger for your text messaging application. So there are many, many choices there. If you want security, you can use the Signal Messenger, which is very secure. If you're a WhatsApp fan, you can use that as well. So choose one that you like, and that's what you should use. You never tie to that look and feel. Same thing with the browser. You can even use a third-party phone, you know, dialer. You don't have to use that. You can even use third-party cameras. You don't have to use that. So there's the flexibility there. The problem is it takes time and energy, and you have to think about it, and you have to try stuff. And, you know, most people just want the phone to work. And I know what a caller wants. She just wants it to look like it did the day before she updated it. And I wish, you know, in a way, I wish Samsung had given you that choice. The update's valuable. It's necessary for security reasons. It's more, you know, Nougat is a more modern version of Android, much improved. I think it's a good update. But I can't say that changing the user interface is a good thing on a phone somebody's had for 3 years. That's just going to disconcert them. That's painful. Not that that wouldn't happen from Apple, by the way. Because when Apple updates, you take it. Whatever they do, you take it. Apple's just very slow to change. So I guess since you've chosen Android, now you're kind of in the customization racket. And good luck. Have fun. Play with it. Enjoy it, because you do have that kind of freedom. Al from Columbia, South Carolina. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Al.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling.
I've got a 27-inch iMac, mid-2010. One day last week, the monitor scrambled and just shut down. It was very hot. I turned it off, went back 3 or 4 hours later, and it's working. But with these symptoms, I'm going to start looking for replacing it with something else.
Before you do,
yes,
do contact Apple, because there I had a similar problem with an iMac, and even though it was years old, they fixed it because it was a known recall. So it wouldn't be a bad idea just to check, call Apple Care or check with your Apple Store, have your serial number handy, and say, "Have there been, my video's not working, has there been a recall?" I had exactly that symptom. I don't remember the year of it. It wasn't as old as yours, but they fixed it for free, even though it's long out of warranty.
Oh, that'd be great.
So that's, I would check that. But you said you're interested in a Chromebook replacement.
Well, I hear you. You're
I've sold you. I sold you on them, huh?
Yes, you do. You sold me on many things over the years.
Well, there are. I have to say, I mean, I go home and I sit down at an iMac. I love my Mac. Chromebooks I recommend for people who don't, whose needs are simple. If you just surf the web, check email, you know, a few things like that. The advantage of a Chromebook, it does that very well, and it does it much more securely than any general purpose operating system. But it is limited. I mean, it's not as, what do you do mostly on your Mac?
I use Photoshop occasionally.
Yeah, see, there's no Photoshop. On the other hand, there is anything you can do in Chrome, you can do on a Chromebook. Chromebook, there is a Chrome extension called Polar, two R's, P-O-L-A-R-R, that has many of the features of Lightroom and Photoshop. It's not as complete, but if it's the features you use, it actually would be a better choice because it's simpler. It's also cheaper.
Yeah, well, I don't want to keep paying for something that I only use once every couple of months.
Yeah, I think Polar is, it's free or very inexpensive.
I'll take a look.
Yeah, polarr.co is the website. And by the way, it's also available for Android, iOS, Macintosh. In fact, you could try it on your Mac if you could get it working. Windows 10 mm-hmm. and Linux. It's a very interesting program. They're really going after Adobe.
Can I ask you one other thing? I don't think you've heard this question before.
Certainly.
I have the same hearing aids that you have.
Ah, the Starkey Halos. Yeah.
Halo.
Yeah.
Right. And I listen to podcasts all the time when I'm in the car or when I'm out in the yard working.
Hang on. I got a break, but I'll take you off the air. Recap when we come back, because we have to break for news at the top of the hour. Leo Laporte. I'm sure there's something important happening. The tech guy. Sorry, Al.
that's okay. Thanks, Leo.
I cut you off, didn't I? I apologize earlier. I'm glad you were able to get back through. I totally apologize.
Well, I'm super happy that I got through the first time, and then bang, something happened.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think I pressed the wrong button. I apologize.
Very first time I ever tried to call you, it went through.
Amazing. Wow. It's a miracle.
It's I'm blessed.
So you listen to podcasts. Are you listening on your Starkeys, or are you listening on the car stereo?
If I'm in the car, I'm trying to listen to it in stereo. I work part-time for a rental car company. I drive cars all over the place. So.
Oh, but you got to pair your Bluetooth each time.
Yeah.
Pain in the butt.
But when I'm at home, I listen on my Starkeys. And when I'm out in the yard, working in the yard, I'll be, you know, happy and dumb doing this, and somebody comes up behind me and starts talking.
And
so I turn around, and I can't. I have to reach into my pocket, turn off the phone. Yeah. I got to take off my work gloves to turn it off.
So people who are listening, let me explain what's happening. If you have an iPhone, these Halos have an iPhone app, and it's awesome. You can have the phone audio, whether it's a phone call or a podcast or music, play through the hearing aids. Now, it's not great for music, but it's fine for voice. It's great for voice. So I use it all the time to surreptitiously listen to ball games, to, you know, tune out conversations I don't want to be a part of. Maybe you need to turn them down a little bit if you're not hearing the people around you.
Well, if I'm using a leaf blower,
I guess you have
like
to turn it all the way up, yeah.
But I'm curious about the AirPods. If I just wanted to, and you're not supposed to have your hearing aids on when you're
mobile. No, you can't. Yeah. Use the AirPods instead. They work exactly the same. And the beauty is, if somebody walks up behind you, they don't seal your ears, so you can still hear them. And you take out one AirPod, it pauses the audio. You can have a conversation. That's all you have to do is just take the one out. It'll pause the audio, have a conversation, and put it back in. That's one thing Apple did so well.
Okay.
It's a total solution to that exact problem.
Now it just takes 6 weeks to get them.
Yeah. Well, my hope, my fervent hope, is that Apple or somebody makes hearing aids out of these because they would be much better audio reproduction than the Starkeys. You know, the hearing aids are only trying to reproduce the voice frequencies, so they aren't very high fidelity. But if I get my AirPods to do what the hearing aids do, of course they don't look as, you know, they're not, everybody knows you've got something in your ear.
Yeah, but they'd be a hell of a lot cheaper too.
And a hell of a lot cheaper. These Starkeys were a pretty penny. Yeah, so you can only, with the AirPods, you can wear one. In fact, I have friends who do that because it doubles the battery life, or you're only depleting the battery life on one at a time.
Oh.
Or you can wear both, and when you remove one, it pauses them.
Okay. Well, if you're only wearing one, why wouldn't it pause?
It's somehow smart that way. I don't know. You're right. That sounds odd, doesn't it? I guess because, and you'll hear when you put both in, it'll go boom, boom. You'll hear it, it'll signal that it's both in, and so it knows if it's got sensors that can tell if it's in your ear or not. So it says, ah, he's listening in stereo, and at that point, if you remove one of them, it'll pause.
Okay.
If you only put one in and you press play, it'll play with just the one.
Fantastic. I'll give that a try.
I really like them. I think you'll like the audio quality. I listen to music on them. And frankly, it's the best Bluetooth phone system. If you want to, for phone, it's fantastic.
Okay.
And the problem with using the Starkeys for the phone is people think you're nuts because you're talking, but they can't hear the other side and you don't understand it. I'll tell you who introduced me to these is Steve Martin, the comedian, the actor. He wears them.
Uh-huh.
And I was sitting with him, and all of us, the phone rings, and he's talking, but I don't hear the other side. I don't know what he's doing. And then I realized, oh, he's using the Starkeys. He can hear the other end, but we can't.
Mm-hmm.
It's great for surreptitious phone calls.
Well, I pretend I'm listening to my wife sometimes.
Yeah. I wasn't going to say that because I think Lisa might be listening, but yeah.
Okay, well, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
I appreciate everything, and I really love the show.
Thank you so much for listening. Thanks, Al. Take care.
Bye now.
Yeah, and you can also use the Apple Watch to pause the UI on these is great. It really is. They've done a very good job designing these. It's funny because they're pricey for headphones, but compared to hearing aids, they're practically giving them away. Hearing aids are ridiculous. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and Macintoshes and smart watches and cameras and, you know, all that stuff. 888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Carlo's in Irvine, California. He's our next caller. Hi, Carlo.
Hey, how's it going, Leo? How's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
Oh, not bad. I'm just roasting down here in Irvine. It's pretty hot.
But. Yeah, but it's so beautiful there. Oh, man.
Well, and plus I have bronchitis, which is
good. Oh, I'm sorry.
But well, but what the deal is, I'll make this as simple as possible. I have a cookie business I started a while back.
Oh, what kind of cookies?
They're my own invention. They're called pillow cookies, and they're very unique. They're like little cakes with lemon, lime, tangerine glaze on it, and chocolate.
They're like madeleines, kind of, the French madeleines.
Almost like madeleines, yeah, but not so eggy.
Mm.
And I'll have to send you some.
Send me some cookies. Oh, my. Okay, for that, you're going to get extra special treatment today.
Excellent. So
here's the special treatment. What's the name of the store, or is there a website? Where can people get these?
Oh, okay. So I sell them at farmers markets. I sell them
neat.
In Buena Park on Saturdays.
So go to the Buena Park Farmers Market
on Saturdays.
Yeah.
It's located at Stanton and Beach Boulevard.
All right.
And then I'll be selling at the Irvine Great Park on Sundays in about a month.
I'll send my friend Steve Gibson, who lives up the road a piece.
Outstanding. And then I'll be selling at the Huntington Beach Farmers Market starting in about 3 weeks.
Nice.
On Fridays.
Well, what can I do to help you with your pillow cookie sales?
Well, of course I had to start the website because a lot of it's online orders. And so the domain name that GoDaddy gave me was MrKCookies.com.
Oh, don't blame GoDaddy.
Yeah.
Well, you chose that, Carlo. What is it, Mr.?
Mr. K's Cookies. So MrKScookies.com.
They didn't just pick that out of thin air.
No, I chose that name.
Yeah.
No, the name works. That's the name of my business.
It's Mr. K's Cookies. Mr. K's Pillow Cookies.
I'm Mr. K because when I teach, all my kids call me Mr. K. It works.
I'll take a dozen tangerine pillows, please.
And, No.
I can't solicit cookies on the air. It's a violation of FCC regulations and my diet.
Oh, okay.
But what can I do to help? So there's your website. I see it. Yep.
Yeah. And so the problem is when people order the cookies, they go through PayPal, and I get a notice on Outlook Express because Outlook Express is the only email program that GoDaddy will let me use.
Outlook Express?
It's a complete fiasco.
Microsoft hasn't made that in a decade.
Right. Well, listen to this. On Sunday, which was Easter, I had a bunch of orders, and I had to look at the address on the email so I knew where I was going. Well, the problem is trying to pull up Outlook Express, it stalls and stalls.
No. First of all, I don't know why you think that's the only one GoDaddy supports. If it works with Outlook Express, it would work with any modern email client. So stop using Outlook. You don't have to. Literally, Microsoft discontinued that, I think, with Windows XP. They stopped making it. So you can use any email client. So Outlook, which is the modern Outlook, it's not my favorite, but but there are many, many choices that you could use. I presume GoDaddy has a web interface. You could use that, right?
Well, whenever I pull up GoDaddy, it goes directly my email address.
Oh, it launches Outlook Express.
Right.
Okay. Windows says that's your default email program, but if you install another one. By the way, they replaced it with Windows Live Mail 10 years ago, and you could use that if you wanted. But those are very simple packages. You probably, I think you want something a little bit better than the.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, than the primitive.
Well, what happened was last week, I spent 2 hours with the tech support in Scottsdale with GoDaddy, and she was great. She was really nice, very patient with me.
What version of Windows are you using?
No, I'm using I use Apple.
Oh my God, you're using Outlook Express on a Mac?
Yeah, I didn't know.
That's even older and worse.
I know.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Oh, get rid of that. First, Apple's Mail is a much better program. And you can use Apple Mail with GoDaddy. You just have to get the settings in there. So if you
do that.
Yeah, well, you open the settings in Outlook Express, or if you Google GoDaddy email settings, because what you'll need is the server name, the POP mail, and the SMTP. POP is for incoming, SMTP is for outgoing. If they have IMAP instead of POP, use that. That's more modern. And you'll need those server names, and then they should explain in if there's a Outlook. I can't believe the GoDaddy guy didn't tell you this.
No, he didn't.
The guy must have been an idiot.
It was weird because I think someone told me, well, GoDaddy might be in cahoots with Microsoft, like they don't want you to use some other.
No, but even Microsoft doesn't want you to use Outlook Express. That guy must have been looking at the notebook that was left around the office in 1999. This is turn of the century technology here.
Well, this is what happened when I asked her.
Literally, the last update to Outlook Express for the Mac was in 2002. Literally.
This is what happened after the 2 hours we spent trying to make this email download. We kept clearing out my cache. We kept doing restarting, clearing out, doing that. We have back and forth. Like 2 hours. And
now you know, by the way, why I do not recommend GoDaddy. Oh my goodness. Right.
Well, then she says, I said, well, can I just use Gmail? I use Gmail all the time. And she goes, no, you don't want to use Gmail because Outlook is more safe and it's more. Respectable.
You were talking to a moron. I don't know.
And I said, respectable? What are you talking about? And she goes, well, you don't want your domain to look hokey. So I go, so I'm basically.
No. Okay, so I have my own domain name, not through GoDaddy, but I have my own domain name. And if you send email to leo@twit.tv, it goes to Gmail. There's no.
Oh.
Yes. So you had the worst customer rep I've ever heard. She was stuck literally in the past, in the last century. Literally.
Oh, man.
Literally. They haven't updated it in 15 years.
I should have talked to you before I went with. My friend said, I'll just use GoDaddy.
No, GoDaddy's fine. You're not tied to, the important point is you're not tied to them for things like, what email program you use. You're only using them for a domain registrar and they're hosting your website. They're putting mail on a mail server on their servers, but that mail server is standard and can be used with any other email client. So the good news, actually Outlook on the Macintosh, the new Outlook is very good. Apple comes, your Mac comes with Apple Mail, which is very good. How recent is your Mac?
It's only 6 months old. I bought a refurbished. Okay. Okay.
So you have the most recent version of Apple Mail. How did you get Outlook Express?
I installed Office because I.
You're not thinking just Outlook. Outlook, not Outlook Express is something different from Outlook.
No, I meant Outlook. Outlook, the email.
Oh gosh. Okay, that makes a lot more sense because Outlook Express is way out of date. All right. Okay. All right. Now I'm going to. Outlook is fine, but if hang on a second because I've kind of derailed this conversation with my outrage, and that was inappropriate because it's not Outlook Express. Thank goodness. Hang on. I'll help you in a second. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You scared me on that because I can't even. Okay, so I take everything back I said about the GoDaddy lady and all that. She was talking about Outlook. That is a modern and good email system. There are other choices. You're not required to use any particular client with GoDaddy. You can use whatever one you want. But Outlook is fine. What is it that it wouldn't do?
Okay. What happened was whenever I get an order, it goes it goes, I first get notified on my Gmail account. It says, you have an order through PayPal.
Yeah.
Then I go to GoDaddy, and then, are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I thought I lost you.
Yep. Nope.
And then I go to GoDaddy, and then I pull up the order, and I see who's ordering it, where it has to go, and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's the way it works.
Yeah.
So what happened last week, I had a bunch of orders for Easter, and every time I tried to open up Outlook, it was stalling and stalling. And she blamed it on the Wi-Fi in my apartment.
No.
And she said, oh, it's your Wi-Fi. I'm going, that's nonsense, because my internet works great here. And she goes, well, you know, you. And then we tried for 2 hours. We were emptying the cache, doing this, doing that.
Doesn't GoDaddy have a web-based interface? Like, can't you use a browser to go to your email? I'm sure they do.
No.
They don't.
I have GoDaddy on my password manager, and so I go through my password manager and go right into GoDaddy, and it takes me directly to my email, which is Outlook, and that's where I see my orders. But I'm not used to Outlook. I'm used to Gmail, and
So you there's a couple of things you can do. You can have Gmail get your email from the GoDaddy server and store it there. It will work fine. And since you like Gmail, I would do that. So if you go into Gmail, in the settings, there's pop. I think it says pop and email access or something settings. You can give it the Outlook email settings, which you'll need to get from Outlook. I mean, from GoDaddy. And I'm going to put that in the show notes at our website. They do support webmail. So you could also, I think, if you wish, use a website to get to the GoDaddy mail directly. But since you like Gmail, which I do too, I think you're absolutely right. The lady was wrong about Gmail. What you'll want to do is and you're already getting the PayPal messages in Gmail. So this is just a logical way to do it. What you want to do is go to your Gmail settings and set it up with the GoDaddy web with the GoDaddy email settings so that it collects your email from GoDaddy. And it will do that, you know, every 15 minutes. It will go say, is there any more mail? And it will show up in your Gmail inbox. You can have a filter on it that says, hey, if it's a cookie order, put it in this folder. And do it all in Gmail. So the only thing you need to get, and I'm, as I said, we're going to put a link in the show notes to this, is the particular settings. You could Google it too. Set up, you know, GoDaddy web, GoDaddy mail with Gmail, and there'll be a page that says, here's, and it'll probably be from GoDaddy, here's how you set up Gmail to work with GoDaddy. It totally does.
All right. Then what she told me was a bunch of nonsense. She said you don't want to use Gmail because
she's nuts.
Outlook is more secure.
Not true.
And because, and I just believe, because I'm not tech savvy.
Yeah, that's fine. You like Gmail. I give you permission. In fact, I encourage you to use Gmail.
Okay. Now, after this, I'll make this quick because I know you're...
Yeah, I got 30 seconds. But, yeah.
Okay. But she said, well, let's just use Exchange. She said, you should use Exchange. What's Exchange? What is that?
That's a Microsoft proprietary email server. You don't want to use that.
Oh no! I don't want to use Microsoft. I bought Apple to get away from Microsoft.
We're going to put a link in the show notes, techguylabs.com. We're going to put it all there. Okay. I'm sorry I derailed you. Thank you, Carlo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, I spent some more time with Carlo, and we got it all worked out. We're going to put a link in the show notes, techguylabs.com, that explains how to get your mail from GoDaddy into his preferred email, which is Gmail. Gmail's great. He likes it. He's used to it. He knows how to use it. So we're going to set that up so that Gmail collects all his email from GoDaddy's servers. That's the best way to do it. And that's how I do it. I have a fairly elaborate email system. If you send me email, it gets bounced. You're sending it... to my personal page, for instance, leo@leoville.com. That's my personal email. There is no website at leoville.com. It gets bounced from leoville.com. I've set this up with my domain name registrar. That's the people who you sign up with for a name like leoville.com. I use Hover, but you know, GoDaddy's fine. There's a lot of them. That gets forwarded to Gmail. So as soon as any, you know, I feel sorry for any email because it's got to get bounced around a lot. You send me an email, goes to leoville.com. Leoville.com says, no, there's no email here. Go to Gmail. And it goes to my Gmail account. And the reason I do that is because, well, A, I have a nice web interface to my email. But B, Gmail has, as far as I'm concerned, the best free anti-spam filtering. They have very good anti-spam because they do it collaboratively. You know, if you get a spam message in your Gmail account, there's a button, you press it, you say, this is spam. It takes it and hides it away from you, but it also sends a signal to the Gmail servers, hey, Leo thought that was spam. And if enough people do that, Gmail goes, I think it is spam, and they make sure that nobody else gets that message. So as a user, you're always training Gmail, and it's been around long enough and it has enough users that it very rarely misses spam these days. So I'm very happy with that. So I send it to Gmail. That's kind of like the first stage treatment for spam. And it's sitting on Gmail. I now have access to it. But then I do another thing. I have another client company that I use called Fastmail. I pay them. Gmail's free, but I pay Fastmail to host my mail. So I have Fastmail go periodically and collect all the mail from Gmail. And the reason I use Fastmail is because I have lots of rules on there and I'm able to configure it much more than I can configure my Gmail. And then I collect the mail from Fastmail on my desktop computers using a variety of different email programs. I mentioned the Mac program I use, MailMate. I use Thunderbird. I'm about to use something new called Claws on Linux. On Windows, I have yet to find a really good email client. Open to suggestions. I used to use Pegasus for years. Anyway, good email client. I email is a lot of my time and mostly wasted, so I've got to have a good email system. So that's how I do it. So my mail gets bounced around, and it all works fine. And it's filtered and it's processed. By the time it gets to me, all the bad stuff is kind of filtered out, and it's all filtered into folders. And if I were in business selling cookies, that's exactly what I would do. Because you can leave out the Fastmail part, but I would have Gmail filters that say, oh, if it's a cookie order, if it came from my cookie site, for instance, you know, if it says, oh, you know, Carlo at MrK'sCookies.com, then you put that in a special folder. And you could even have Gmail notify you. You have all sorts of things you can do. Pop up on your screen so that you don't miss any important orders. That's a small business. Bigger businesses will have other ways of doing this. Somebody in the chat room suggested Zoho, Z-O-H-O. That's a very good kind of all online business service, including customer relationship management, CRM, which a lot of businesses want to do. There are a lot of choices. Salesforce.com is the big CRM company. They have solutions as well. So there are... It's worth, you know, Carlos, I'm sorry, I'm not very technical. I don't think anybody needs to be technical. I'm not a snob in that regard, but it is worth, if there's processes you're doing over and over again and they become pain points or time wasters or there's inefficiencies, it is worth taking extra time to streamlining those because then life is just easier. You know, put a little time into the stuff that's wasting your time and get that working. Do you want, speaking of, let's see, I think I should take another call. We got time. Alex on the line from Yorba Linda, California. Hi, Alex.
Hello.
Leo Laporte, what can I do for you?
I'm a high school student right now.
Okay.
I'm interested in computer science.
Are you techie? Are you kind of a geek?
Yeah, kind of.
What do you like to do right now?
Right now, like, I'm learning Java programming.
Oh, good.
So I wanted to build myself a computer.
Good. Now, I'm going to tell you something, Alan. I don't want to scare you off. Building a computer, you do for educational purposes, not to save money.
Yeah.
You understand that, right? You're going to learn a lot about how computers work. You're also, the other advantage of building it yourself is you can get it just the stuff you want. But in order to do that, you're going to have to learn a lot because not everything works with everything else. And here's the big catch with building your own computer. There's no one number to call if it doesn't work. You're the number to call. You're the guy who's going to do all the tech support. You understand that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you buy a motherboard from Newegg and you buy a case from Amazon and you buy a video card from, you know, Best Buy, and you put those all together and it doesn't work, who do you call? You call NVIDIA? You call, you know, Gigabyte, the motherboard manufacturer? You call Corsair, the case manufacturer? No, they're all going to say, well, it's not our problem. Call Gigabyte or call Corsair. So you're the guy who's going to be doing all the support. And that's why it's a learning process. So now that I've warned you, what can I do to help you?
Well, my dad said I could, like, build the computer only if, like, I called you and got your advice on it.
All right. And I'm going to simplify this for you. Your dad is a smart fellow, by the way. Thank him for me. Actually, I read there was a Reddit thread from a kid who said, and he was a lot younger than you. I think he was 10. He said, my dad said he would build me a computer, but I had to do a report on each part. And the better the report, the better the quality of the part. So if I did a really good job, I'd get the top-of-the-line video card. And everybody on Reddit went crazy, like, this is a brilliant idea. I wouldn't make you do that. I'm going to actually simplify it. There's a great website called PC Perspective. It's PCPER.com. And they have what they call their hardware leaderboard. And this really simplifies processes, in which they describe four build-yourself computers, from the cheapest to the crazy dream machine. You could pick your price point. And then they say, in that price point, this is the best motherboard, this is the best processor, this is the best case. The advantage of that is you're going to be able to set a budget and then maximize your performance for that budget. But you're also going to get parts that work together, so that you're not like, this video card doesn't work with this motherboard, what am I going to do? Everything will work together. Makes it a lot easier. And they have lots of great information about all these parts. They review computer components. And then they'll recommend places to go. But generally, if I'm going to build my own PC, I go to Newegg.com and I just order it all there. That's very easy.
Sounds great.
Okay. So there's the research you need to do. PC Perspective. They've got all the reviews. They've got that leaderboard. Makes it very easy. And then, you know, you can buy them from Amazon. Actually, the last computer we built, we bought a lot of it from Amazon just because they had overnight shipping. It was easier. So good. Good luck. Is it for gaming or what are you going to do with it?
Gaming and like work.
Fantastic. I think your dad's a smart fella and I'm glad you're building it. If you have any problems, call me, okay?
Sure.
Thanks, Alex. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Josh is on the line from Georgia with an update. Hi, Josh.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I spoke with you last week regarding a software issue I had with my Mac.
Yes.
In Safari.
Yes.
And you said to, you know, try to upgrade my 17-inch MacBook Pro.
Oh, yeah. You're the 17-inch laptop guy. I remember now. Yeah.
Well, let me tell you what.
What?
Apple kept telling me that I could update to Sierra, so I did. Everything came back.
It all works.
It all works. Now, I had four programs that would not work.
Okay.
I had to update.
Yeah.
One of them was VMware Fusion.
Yeah. They get you because they make you pay every year for those updates, which is annoying.
Right. Even though I thought I bought the lifetime license.
There's no lifetime for them. Lifetime is the lifetime of this particular version.
Lifetime payments for updates.
Yeah, exactly. You'll be paying for a lifetime. Exactly.
But anyway, I just wanted to thank you, first of all. And anyway, everything worked. And
nice.
Email stuff came back.
So happy.
And thank you for your help.
Well, I'm so glad it worked. A lot of times I talk to people, I never hear from them again. And I don't know whether it worked or didn't work, so I'm glad to know that that did work. We weren't sure if we could get that 17-inch MacBook Pro. It's so old, whether we could get it to the most recent version. But
since it's the last one on the shelf, Leo, I'm assuming that they had updated it somewhat.
Yeah.
It went through with a breeze.
Good. Yeah, and Apple's very good. They won't let you try to do it if it won't work, so... That's excellent news. And then Safari's working and everything's going great.
Everything's working.
You get on your website. Good.
Yes, there's a couple things I don't like about it, but Sierra. But there again, that's neither here nor there. Everything's working. And, I even got a NTFS external hard drive to load on Sierra.
Nice. It can read and write it, huh?
Yes.
That's fantastic.
I was blown away.
That's...
So anyway, I like it.
Yay. They must have updated that recently. That's great. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
You're certainly welcome. And again, thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Take care. We got an update, by the way, from our caller who was interested in different email programs for the Macintosh. And I mentioned MailMate. And I said, one of the things I require from a Mac email program is support for PGP or GPG encryption. And he's in our chat room and he says, you know what? There's a plugin on AirMail 3 for GPG and it works. So now I'm going to try AirMail 3. It's good. You're going to have to pry MailMate out of my hands, though. I love it. This has been the email show, hasn't it? 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Joseph is next in Massachusetts. Hello, Joseph.
How you doing? First time caller. I'm a blind person. You're going to be shocked. I'm still using Outlook Express at Windows 7 for the
You must have been laughing at that last call.
No. I may need to talk to you off the air. I'll give you my email. I'm having a hell of a time here. People don't understand screen readers have to be configured.
Oh, I know.
Weren't made for blind people. You're a nice guy. They like to talk to you off the air. I have a problem with Windows. I can't delete certain. I want to delete certain sounds and put in for my media sound. The Windows sound starts, but it doesn't say when you read the sound, and it says I need permissions. And I was told when I made my computer, I shouldn't have had two accounts. It should have just said owner. So someone did it for me. So
No. That's fine. That's whoever told you that's wrong. Owner, but I don't know what they're
owner
talking
is
about.
Okay, but not Joseph HP and the
nothing other. Wrong with Joseph HP.
Well, I have three. One says administrator. I don't know.
You
which
can have as many accounts as you want. have all the accounts you want, Joseph. It's your computer. Yeah. You should have one account that is an administrator account. That's the account you'll use for installing software, modifying system files, things like that. And generally, I tell people, don't use that account day to day. Use a limited user or standard user account for most of your work. But you may be somewhat different because I bet you your screen reader needs to run as administrator.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. So you're a good example of somebody who should use an administrator account always.
Well, what can I do to fix this problem?
You're obviously not using an administrator account right now, I would guess. Yes?
Well, no, I am. I think I am. But some of the things don't, they need administrator privileges, and I don't know how to get it.
Oh, yeah. I get it. I get what you're saying. Yeah.
I can't redo Windows because I'm totally blind, and it doesn't talk.
I understand. Like, I can tell you what's going on. And there's a reason why you can't, your screen reader can't help you with this. This is... And by the way, I have to say, I have talked to the accessibility person at Microsoft. They are very committed. This is, and as is Apple. These guys understand that computers are very important technologies for everybody, and they want to make sure that anybody who wants to use their systems can. So I think they're paying close attention to this, but this is what's going on. Even though you're logged in as an administrator, for security reasons, they want to verify that you're choosing to do this as an administrator. And this is because so many people just kind of, they're using their computer and they click a button and it wants to install, you know, malicious software. They're not paying attention. So Microsoft calls this user access control.
I turned it off because I don't like it. It bothers me.
You won't work with your screen reader because they put a special screen up so that it can't be automatically accepted, right? So
is that the thing? Do you want to install?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can turn that off.
I know. Okay, good. So that's what I was going to suggest is turn off UAC because your screen reader can't handle it.
It's off.
But you already turned it off.
But I'm still having trouble. Help, Leo. Help me.
Do you have anybody around you sighted who can read you what's going on?
No, and I also get crazy emails, sex emails. How to delete them? I don't need. They're bad. I mean, I like good women, but not good. Filthy.
I know. I don't blame you.
I'm blocking it, but each time I get another block.
No, you can't block it because they don't use a real address, so it's different every time you get it. That's called spam, and frankly, that's why I use Gmail because it does that automatically. So you might want
to
look.
Have to make me a Gmail.
Yeah, you might want to look for a Gmail. Somebody can set you up a Gmail account. The problem is because you can't tell me what the screens say when you get this. I can't tell you what's going on. It does sound like it wants some sort of additional permission for you to do something that's a system-level process. Not sure why that would happen if you've turned off UAC.
It says you asked the entrusted installer something about permission. The screen reader said, I don't remember. I wish I could give you control. I know you wouldn't screw it up.
Yeah, I don't. If I had worked on everybody's computer that called me, I wouldn't be able to work for a living.
People are mad at me because I'm not on Windows 10. I know you don't.
No, I'm not mad at you. What Windows are you using?
7.
See, there's a very good reason for you not to upgrade, right? Are you using JAWS? What do you use?
Yes.
So there's very good reason for you not to upgrade. You've got a stable system, and you know how it works, and JAWS works. You don't have to buy an upgrade to JAWS. So, no, you should. Windows 7's fine. I am not sure what's going on, and I presume that after you turned off UAC, you restarted JAWS, maybe even restarted the whole computer. Is this a new problem you've had lately, or has this been happening all along?
Barely, just started recently, and I also am going to get another hard drive because there's a little blurb in this hard drive. It goes brrr, sometime JAWS does, and I think, and there's maybe an error in Windows. Oh, I'm just having bad luck here.
You know, Joseph, I wish I could be of more help, and I just can't because I'm not sure what's going on. Make sure JAWS is installed as an administrator. I'm sure you are. And, you know, you installed it when you were an administrator account. But I'm baffled, and I don't have enough information to help you, I'm afraid. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It would be worth calling Microsoft and asking for their accessibility folks. Because almost certainly, unlike me, they would be able to say, oh, JAWS, this, you got to do that. I tried to keep up on this stuff, but because I don't use JAWS, I just don't know. But I think this would warrant a call to Microsoft support and ask specifically for the accessibility people. And I know that they're committed to accessibility. I know that that's a really high priority for them. I think you'll get actually excellent support if you do that. My recommendation. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, talking high tech. Larry on the line from Pittsburgh. No, I'm sorry. Larry, you're coming up. Janet is on the line from Santa Monica. Hi, Janet.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. So I used PCs for many years, but I always heard you talking about how MacBooks didn't get viruses or malware. So I went and got a MacBook Air. And guess what? I got malware.
Yeah, I haven't said that recently.
this is a 2014 MacBook Air. And so I went online and I found that a lot of sites that were telling you how to remove it were actually
malware
sites.
Yeah, so malware does exist on the Mac, but it's very rare and it's very difficult to get it. Why do you think you have malware?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. First of all, it was redirecting me to a bunch of different websites that I wasn't. I would try to get to one site, and it was redirecting me to other.
Okay. Okay.
And it kept coming up with strange messages.
Okay.
So I finally figured out how to remove it.
Yeah, that's a browser hijacker. It's malware for sure, but it's kind of minor malware because it's easily fixed.
Well, I did fix it. I thought. But then suddenly, the whole computer started dying, and it wouldn't take a charge anymore, and then it just completely died. I took it into the Apple store.
You're blaming me, aren't you? I can tell. I feel it. It's my fault, Janet. I apologize.
No, you know, I thought you might have some insider scoop.
Well, how old was the MacBook Air?
2014.
Yeah, so batteries don't live forever. It sounds like the battery died. Did Apple replace it?
No, they said it was the logic board, which is the motherboard. They said it's shot and it's $500 to send it out.
Yeah, and maybe more to fix it.
Yeah, and they said I need to back up all my data. I have to take it to a third-party data recovery specialist because they don't do that.
Yeah, whenever you bring a computer to anyone, always back it up first because there's no guarantee you'll get the same computer back or the same hard drive. And you listened, but you didn't listen good because you don't have a backup. Do you have any backup?
I do have iCloud. I have to go on there and see how much it backed up. It's completely backed up my phone. That's the good news. So I have most of my pictures saved.
Yeah, it kind of depends how you set up the Mac, whether the documents folder got backed up to iCloud or not. If it did, then you're probably okay. I mean, it just depends what was on the Mac. You should always back up the whole thing, obviously. And relying on iCloud just kind of, well, I'm sure it's doing it. But you might you might be okay. And you can, by the way, log in on any computer. It doesn't have to be that one or even a Mac. You can log in on any computer and see if it's on iCloud. So I would do that for sure. Before did you bring in the laptop or you're still?
Yeah, I brought it in. It's just sitting in the shop waiting for me to tell them what I've done with it.
Yeah, so check iCloud, make sure you got everything still. Do you have a computer you can log into it from?
I do. I have an old PC that
You can do it on a PC. You'll just see it on the screen instead of downloading it, but that's fine.
Do you know what causes those logic boards to fail?
Random stuff. A computer's not perfect. It's like anything. Things break. MacBook Airs might be more prone to failure because they're so thin. It's not so difficult to kind of bend them or twist them, and that is death to logic boards. If they crack, it's just not going to work again. So it could be that, but it could also just be unfortunately it's out of warranty, but it could have been poorly manufactured and have a flaw. It could be it got dropped. There's an infinite way. Just like anything else, computers break. They fail.
So you don't think it's related to the malware?
No, absolutely not. Malware will never damage hardware.
Okay.
And in your case, the malware was merely a browser hijacker, I believe, and that's a very minor kind of malware. It just changes your browser settings, and as you figured out, is easily removed. How did you remove it?
I don't remember. I went online. I looked. I tried a lot of different things. I just kept looking and looking and. Once I found the right information, it wasn't difficult.
Yeah, you use Safari probably. Safari supports extensions. It keeps those extensions in a kind of a hidden folder. If you go to that folder and empty it, then the malware's gone. So in other words, it doesn't modify your system dramatically, and it certainly doesn't change hardware. It does not break hardware. So that was a coincidence. It was an unfortunate coincidence. I'm hoping that iCloud backed up everything. So check, go to log into your iCloud account and see what you can see. See if your files are there. You may lose some other stuff. Not everything's backed up by iCloud. Browser bookmarks, for instance, might not be backed up. I mean, it just depends on what syncing you had turned on. Next time when you get that computer back, download a program called Super Duper. It's free and it will make a complete copy of your operating system and your disk so that you can. Put it in another Mac, boot up, and be good to go. That's the best way to back up.
Yeah, well, right now they can't get it to turn on at all.
Yeah, no, I understand. It's too late now.
But do you think it's worth fixing it, or do you think I should just get a new one?
It's 3 years old. It's going to, did they say, they said $500 up front, and then they'll let you know how much it's going to cost, right?
No, they first said $96, and they upped it to $500.
$96 was the battery replacement, but will $500 fix it, or is that just a beginning estimate?
$500 will fix it, but they will probably wipe it. So they said you do. Have
Yeah, they always do that. There's nothing you. Yeah, that's just the nature of the beast. $500 is less than a brand new MacBook. A new MacBook Air would cost you twice that.
But it's new.
But it would be new. They are kind of replacing the MacBook Airs. I don't think they're going to make them anymore. So if you really like that super thin form factor, it might be worth fixing. The new ones are not much different than the three-year-old ones, to be frank. But the other issue is maybe the logic board today, but maybe there's other damage that's not showing up that in a month or two, other stuff will happen, all related.
Uh-huh.
If they're not going to warranty it, they're going to replace the logic board and warranty that. But if the hard drive fails, So it's, this is a close call. $500 versus maybe $1,200 for a replacement. I'd say fix it. Apple's pretty good about this. If you brought it to an Apple store, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's the Apple store, they're good. And just make sure that that's the cost, not. Like, well, because I've had that happen. They said, well, if it's this, it'll be $500. But they don't say if it's that, it'll be $2,200. And then that wouldn't be worth it. But $500, I think that's about right. Let me tell you about something called Carbonite. Thanks for the call. I'm sorry you had such trouble with your MacBook, Janet. Viruses are rare. Browser hijackers aren't really viruses. They're kind of a minor annoyance, easily removed. So, yeah, that happens to Macs. But it's pretty rare that you're going to get something. So there's Mac ransomware now and stuff, but it's hard to get. You have to really work at it. So make sure you got a backup, and I think you'll be okay. Yeah, go ahead. I would say pay to fix it, if you trust me still. I don't think I have time for another call. I think it's just enough time to say thank you to our musical director, Michael Cozio, spinning the hits on this fine day, and to Kim Schaffer, answering the phones, grooming you for your appearance on national radio. But most of all, I always have to thank you guys for being here. I appreciate your listening. We have a great resource for you. It's free. It's available all the time, 24/7. That's the website. All the questions, all the answers, even audio and video of the shows are there. TechGuyLabs.com. Use it in good health. And I will see you next time. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.